Blog Talk Radio. This is Cindy S. Solomon coming to you today on March 5th, 2012 with the Global Product Management Talk. The Global Product Management Talk raises the bar for what is possible to accomplish in a real-time open platform event by encouraging participants to expand their knowledge base with each event, utilize new products in real time as we introduce and beta test various products for participating, enable participants to showcase their knowledge and share resources, and crowdsource educational content for product people to stay apprised of new developments, thinkers, and events in the practice of managing products from inception to market and innovation. And this week, we are brought to you by the Association of International Product Marketing and Management, the AIPMM, which was founded in 1998, and promotes worldwide excellence in product management education while providing value to individual members, corporate members, and sponsors through training, education, certification, and professional networking opportunities. Please visit our sponsor at www.aipmm.com. You could listen to us live at blogtalkradio.com/prodmanagementtalk, PRODMGMTTALK. I am Cindy S. Solomon, coming to you live from the San Francisco Bay Area, and I am delighted today to be welcoming our speaker, Hutch Carpenter, who is the Vice President at Spigot. He will be discussing expanding the innovation pie. Two factors are driving an interest in expanding the process of innovation beyond research and development, product and strategy inside companies. First, we're seeing a general move inside organizations and out in the streets towards broader participation in decisions. Second, studies are confirming the value of diverse inputs in the innovation process. This talk discusses ways to address these emerging opportunities. And I'm delighted to welcome our co-host, who has been a previous speaker, Prabhakar Gopalan. Prabhakar is a strategy consultant based in Austin, Texas. He's also a corporate strategist at Dell. He founded Whole Mind Consulting, an innovation-driven management consulting firm. His experience spans working in a number of roles in product management, product marketing, and consulting services at large and small technology firms. And he's a very popular speaker at Product Camp Austin, where he recently won the Best Presentation Award. His blog postings can be found at the popular product management blog on productmanagement.net, as well as building4.tumblr.com. And let me tell you some more about our speaker, Hutch Carpenter, who is Vice President of Product for Spigot, which was recently named a hot San Francisco company. He works on blending the crowd with traditional evaluations to get the best ideas funded. Previously, he worked in social software, and he brings more than 7 years' experience in the enterprise software market. Prior to becoming a product manager, he transitioned from being a banker, and he earned his MBA at the University of Virginia. And again, I am Cindy F. Solomon. Whatever you want to know about me, you could find out at cindyfsolomon.com. Okay, welcome. And we are tweeting. You can follow our tweets by using the hashtag at PRODMGMTTALK. Welcome, Hutch.
Thank you, Cindy.
Great to have you, and welcome, Prabhakar.
Thank you very much, Cindy. Glad to be here again, back in a few months. So
in the room, we have Pam Rose, Tom Evans, Jose Baldea, who tweets a lot about innovation. Would you like to add anything to that intro?
Sure. Glad to be here. It's kind of a fun position to be for this hour here. The topic is on innovation and making companies better. Certainly the whole process of how you expand that out, which has its own product management ramifications. And I also get to be a product manager at a company doing that. It's a great opportunity to talk through some of those things. So looking forward to this.
Excellent. And Prabhakar, do you want to add anything before we dive in?
Like Hutch, I'm very excited to be here. I think this is one of the smartest crowds speaking on this topic, exchanging ideas. Is always fun. So thank you for the opportunity, and I'm looking forward to just brainstorming here.
Great. The first question was, what is the customer job in the Clay Christensen sense that needs to be filled by innovation management software?
Okay. The customer job that needs to be filled by innovation management software. So let's start with this notion of customer job, which Clayton Christensen is probably one of the most well-known proponents of it. And I'm actually also pleased to be finding that folks from the Rewired group, Bob Molesta and team, are also doing a lot around that as well. In fact, they're working with Clay a bit. So the job to be done, in a lot of ways, probably a lot of us product folks may have heard this one before. The customer doesn't buy a drill, they buy a hole. The drill is just the mechanism to get there. And in some ways, it's that old way, but it's, we're talking about it in a new sense of that mentality permeating throughout the process of how you approach your product from a product management perspective and innovation in general. And so when Clayton Christensen talks about it, he talks about people hire products and services to get a job done. They have a need. They don't have an intrinsic need for the product per se. What they have is a need to get something done. That product's going to get them there. That's a little bit of background on the job to be done approach. Simple statement of what is the job to be done by innovation manager software. So here's how I put it. When I seek, and I and this person being someone from a company, when I seek innovations for organic growth, streamlining operations, and customer engagement, I want to leverage the full cognitive diversity of my organization. That's what I know. It's a fairly big job to be done, if you will. I think it captures the gist of what we're trying to get done with innovation management software. Yeah, there's a lot there, but you can break it down. Prabhakar, I don't know if you have anything you want to add on that.
It's fairly profound here. I mean, it's too short in a tweet chat to think this way. Yeah, Clayton Christensen thinks about the job, not the customer, as the fundamental unit of analysis. That's what he has on the HBR stuff. It is true. I think more and more what we are seeing is there are dimensions to this job, right? How to do this job or what are the dimensions of this job. The emotional aspects of it are exemplified in the world that we are in now. The how becomes more and more important now. Before, there were not that many hows. I feel like with the technology and with the way that problems can be solved, there are multiple ways to solve the same problem. So it's not just problem solving alone. Okay, the customer is there. So you can imagine the customer in front of you, and then you imagine the job to be done. And you're saying, well, it's the job that's what is going to do things. But that job is actually between the customer and the end result. All these ways to get the job done, there are so many ways, right? While it is true that we should put the focus on the job, but then we have to clearly look at the dimensions of that job because they will speak to how...
Yep, that's right. And it's actually interesting. I mean, we'll talk more about the innovation pie, but just on this particular subject. And that's actually an interesting point because customers know better than any of us what they want to get done. It's an important thing to kind of get that right. And so first off is sort of thinking in terms of those jobs to be done and how it sorts out. What are the more common ones? What are the most important ones? From that information, you then start thinking about, okay, how are we going to solve it? And that's kind of where classic product comes in, with the features and the ideas and the innovation that's going to fall around that. The first principle really is to get right. Think about what they're trying to get done. And in some ways, you might look at this, and I think some folks, veteran product managers, might look at this. Well, I've always talked about customer needs, and I think that's true. But I do think that it's very early in the jobs to be done methodology. Again, I'll say that the Rewired group is doing a lot. Also, you'll see that with the Strategy group, their outcome-driven innovation approach as well. But you're starting to see some real frameworks now being started to put around more than just what are the customer needs, real crisp ways of articulating and analyzing that. I think we're still in the early stages of that methodology and that philosophy, but I think it's going to grow more and more. And I think I'm glad that Clayton Christensen is out there talking about it because he's a great advocate for these sort of things. So then going back to when I was talking about the jobs to be done that need to be filled with by innovation management software, just sort of step back for a second. Traditionally, innovation has been kind of the province of inside organizations. It'd be, say, let's say, the product group. I mean, I'm in the product group of Spigot. I get that. It's the strategy group, R&D. That's the kind of realm that's traditionally where, you know, the ideas have been coming out of, okay? That's cool. In this new realm, those particular, let's call those the centers, the traditional centers of innovation, they continue to have their roles. They continue to do the things they do, especially R&D. You know R&D is out there kind of looking out on the edge and some things that may not have like clear kind of roadmaps initially but can develop it. But what is new, banning it out much further, getting a much broader selection of employees involved in the process of those, sourcing those ideas and actually identifying the ones that are the best. And that actually has really helped. So in some ways, when I describe innovation management software, the modern innovation management software relies heavily on both crowdsourcing and also social prints. And a lot of what, like for Spigot, what we're doing, we fall under the general heading of social software. Some of our peers in the space would include Jive Software and Yammer, IBM Connection, SharePoint 2010. Our particular focus is around the innovation management space. So if you think of more broadly speaking in the social realm, we're part of that social realm with a particular focus around the innovation side of the thing. What we find that organizations are looking for is, I know I've got good ideas out there. And you know what happens to most of those ideas right now? They get stuck at the departmental level. They're in an email somewhere. There's that idea you kind of have posted on somewhere. Conversation you have with a colleague. Boss who said, that's great, did you get that report done? You know, those kinds of things. And so what this is opening up is a lot of folks at the various levels of organizations know that there's much more innovation energy, and they're really trying to tap that and trying to grow that. So that's a lot of what we're seeing out there with a lot of the companies using the innovation management software right now.
Yeah, there are a slew of innovation management software platforms available. Several companies have jumped into this space providing innovation management software. It's a very recent trend, right? This is fantastic for how can I make this more structured? It's a tool, right? At the end of the day, people want to innovate, and what better way to do it than use a tool like quote-unquote software.
And I agree. I sort of followed on that. I often find myself when I'm talking with organizations about what we do, you think about our roots. The roots of broadening the participation, it's been that suggestion box. It's been the email, internal email, ideas@companyname.com or whatever it is. And that's about as far as it's gone. One of those sort of black boxes. You send it off and you're never sure what happened to your idea. Is it a dead letter file? Did someone laugh at it? You don't actually have any sense of what happened with it, and much less any sense of, do other people share my concern, or are they interested as well? Following up on what you're saying there, it's important to get culture right. You've got to be thinking about in terms of, if you're willing to do this. The thing that's new with software is the social thing. It's sort of the common platform where this all happens. That traditionally wasn't there. I could think back when Jenny mentioned I used to be a banker. I remember when I was at Bank of America, we had Lotus Notes. There was no way back in the mid-90s you'd take Lotus Notes and use it for this purpose. I mean, maybe you could, but I'll be seriously, none of my colleagues would know anything about that. And so I think what's happened really is over the last decade, you've seen a transformation of the expectations of the software, of what it can do. And I think social as a kind of a, just a principle that you see inside of, you know, various software is growing in itself. So I'm going back, I think the software is an enabler. It doesn't actually solve the problem for you, but it is an enabler, assuming you're willing to actually go down that path of actually expanding the innovation pipeline.
Good point.
Yep.
I see so many discussions that get stuck in the features of the software and the technical abilities of the software and totally missing the bigger question, the bigger issue, which is what are the problems you wanted to solve? Start there and then determine which software serves you the best.
I think you could ask back the same question, the job done question. Is it helping me get the job done? Or just anything else?
I want to take this opportunity to welcome Larry McKeo, who happens to be in San Francisco today, I believe, at an event, and John Peltier, who's listening from Atlanta. Hi, John. Erica Anderson, who's tuning in from Utah. Someone, Spigot Products, and I did mention Tom Evans coming in from Austin. And he says that recently at a software as a service conference, one topic was the importance of community management. So he'd like to know, how does this relate to innovation management?
Sure. Okay, let's do that. Yeah, it is. Let's take it a little step by step. And actually, that question follows nicely with one thing that Cindy teed up, which is, first of all, which employees are right for participating? I mean, that's a kind of a community management question there as well, isn't it? And my answer on that is, who's right to participate in an innovation process? I mean, gosh, you know, the smart people that have the best education. No, it turns out it's anyone who can think. Anyone who can think is actually great for participating in the innovation process. So really, I like to say there's no stereotypical right person, employee. And when I'll say that from the vantage point I have, we've had clients who have a very highly educated workforce, many with masters, PhDs, and they've been using Spigot, and they get results. But then flip it the other way, we actually have some clients that point to their in-store retail staff. And you know what? Those are getting results as well. So what that tells you is it's not really about education levels. The other thing I'll say is in terms of the right kind of employee, maybe you think in terms of, well, people in the R&D department are better than, you know what? Actually, I'd argue you actually want to get the people that actually don't quite have a voice yet right now in the process. Some of the best people that are involved in there are the ones that are kind of at the crispy edge of the organization. They're the ones that are outward facing, talking with customers. They are on a daily basis, they're receiving all sorts of inputs that are incredibly valuable. And I think giving those folks a presence in the process is actually very important. So going back to the question about innovation management, let's start with that notion of who should be involved. The answer is, well, really everybody. Just because you're going to get different vantage points, different points of view, and really different ideas.
Yeah, the answer in voice, Hutch, I think, you know, I had written it down as the answer for the fifth question here, but it bubbled up all the way. So completely agree with you on that. I think some of the other things also we need to look at is the period of people doing innovation in labs only. You know, you should be able to do it everywhere, not just in labs, right? That's one. And then this general trend, right? You see democratization of everything. And why not democratize the innovation process itself? Why should it be just there are only few gates to innovation? Like, unless you work here, unless you do this, unless you are A or B or C, you know, rank, title, or you are the commandant, or all this is just, it's not a legitimate way to produce value, right? So a more democratized process. And then good thing is that we have cloud computing, we have globalization, we have social networks, we have software, we have all sorts of enablers for this kind of democratization of the innovation process. That means, well, if the platform is there that anybody can participate, then the question of is there anybody who is right to participate becomes kind of secondary. Like, it doesn't even exist. Anybody who wants to can, who wants to think or apply and question, who everybody should get the voice. So the platform enables that voice, and then everybody can participate, and then may the best ideas win, may the best outcomes be generated out of that system rather than some gatekeeper dictating what it should be. We know that crowds are better than one person deciding. It's about decision making that this is altering, not just idea generation, right? It's also shifting the decision making process itself, if you think about it, because now it is open. It's no longer like you're not submitting your ideas in a closed box or vacuum, right? Because by design, the platform becomes open. So everybody's ideas get opened up, you see who's doing what, and then the decision-making process itself becomes more transparent. And so the role of managers then, of middle management, people that aren't really adding value, also dramatically goes down. Basically transformed the organizational design into creators, thinkers, getting work done, job done, and there it is. That's innovation value chain there. You basically short-circuiting the innovation value chain or eliminating waste out of the innovation value chain, right?
You're making a case for enabling what the intention of the organization was to begin with.
Yes, absolutely.
I thought there might be a disagreement with you, Hutt.
In terms of, I do want to follow up on one thing, though, and it's probably because I was saying that. I thought, there was a good question you asked, too. Isn't this a popularity contest for ideas? And I have seen that. I've read critiques to that point. Because it, you crowdsource, and it's like, well, yeah, you know, it's a crowd. You know, I think, first off, popularity as in, let me put it this way. An idea that struck a nerve with frontline employees, right, this is good, and managers can ignore it because it's whisked away as a popularity contest. Okay, what does that say? Because that's one of the objectives, is to actually start getting a better handle on what's happening at kind of on the front lines out there. So the other thing I want to say is with crowdsourcing, at least there's a lot of inputs you're going to get. Let me focus on three inputs in the process that, as we see it. One is ideas, okay? So ideas represent a pain point or it's an opportunity someone spotted. This is the good stuff. That's not a popularity contest in of itself. You're looking for that kind of cognitive diversity, those people that are experiencing different things every day. Your organizations are very large, and it's hard to kind of stay on top of everything. But you know what? Individuals know these things. They know their pain points and opportunities. So ideas in of themselves are not a popularity contest, but it's part of the crowdsourcing realm. Comments. You're getting comments against these things. Now, comments are refinements to an idea. They're supporting context for it. They're clarifying questions. I mean, this is the process where it's so much better with social than it used to be. It used to be you email your idea off to some digital suggestion box or whatever, and it's a black hole, and God knows you've never heard anything after that. With the comments and the people engaging around it now, it's much livelier, it's much more dynamic. It allows the idea to actually iterate and to grow, to all change as needed. Again, not really a popularity contest per se. I mean, it's really about getting those diverse viewpoints against it. And then finally, votes. The votes are the judges of individuals. Now, that you might say that's the kind of classic realm of a popularity thing, the votes themselves. In some cases, I'm sure there's going to be some of that, but I think you dismiss that at your own peril when you dismiss the fact that, hey, these are people that actually have a judgment about it, that feel it. And I think that's one of the things that you really do learn as you research the space. You're looking to get that kind of feedback against the idea. And so once it gets more popular, that's great. Now, I will say that when I talk in terms of this, you might look at your top 10 ideas, and it doesn't mean you just take the top three, right? Oh, top three by votes. We're done. That's it. I've always thought you look at the range of, say, top 10, top dozen, whatever it would be, and from that, you're going to have some of the ones that resonate the best and some that, you know, that's great, crowd likes it. We're not going to do that. So in some ways, I hear the critique that it's a cognitive contest, and when you just go off by votes, it's got a little of that. But I always note that you should always actually look in broader net than just the top three. Look at the top 10 that made it, and that's your collection set, if you want to call it that.
Larry McKeel had said that participants in innovation is a 2x2 matrix between the user and the company on an XY axis, with a variety of interactions from C2C, B2C, B2B, C2B. I think he's suggesting a visual graph that shows
right.
all of the touch points. And he also says that the social platform facilitates the ecosystem to innovate. Ideas still need to come from somewhere. Social by itself is not the end.
I
think we're all on the same page. He had earlier said innovation management heads across the entire value chain. Take a look at new opportunities from partners, crowds, peers, and open product management. Yes.
Yes. Yep, that's right. And actually, following that is, I work a lot of the talks here is on employees, where honestly, that's been some of the biggest traction from where we sit in terms of adoption out there. But that being said, I think ultimately, the customer insight element is going to actually, I expect long-term will be bigger. I think we're not there yet. I think we're still evolving in the market. And the reason I say that is that the customer perspective, a couple things, and this is sort of classic stuff, and actually, I think I listened to a Dell podcast about that, but I think and someone brought up the notion that, hey, it's somewhat easier to sort of take a chance and learn this with your internal employees than with your customers. And I think the general answer is yes, although Dell does have IdeaStorm. Generally speaking, that's probably right. For a lot of companies, once you get these out there in the wild, this crowdsourced idea, this good stuff is coming in, you start getting some good ones coming in. One of the processes is by which you take that, because that tends to fall outside the classic product management flow or the R&D flow. Those are actually processes managed inside an organization.
Yeah.
And I think that work of learning that, learning where your strengths are, learning your weaknesses, understanding where the process might break down, who's got areas of responsibility, how do you say no to things, all these little things you have to learn, just be pragmatic. If you do it with employees, you can actually make some mistakes and employees will still come back. They've still got things to do. The risk with customers is, boy, a bad reaction, and, you know, you see all these great stories out there of social media firestorms. You know, I don't have to go that far. But I think that there's just sort of a natural cautiousness initially to learning that. But I think we're seeing pioneers. I can tell you, like, today I know Fisher Price went live with collecting ideas from their customers out there. So I know it's growing, but I think it's still going to take time before it kind of finds it's a huge footing it's going to have, and then you're going to see it very common. Okay, what do you think on that? You probably have some take on that.
How to filter these ideas is a hard question, right? One thing we can think of is, why do organizations exist, right? There's a purpose. You organize a group of people come together. The existential purpose is there. When the ideas that are generated meet that purpose, it's fairly easy to filter them. Somebody says, well, we need to do this, but it doesn't actually match to the purpose of the organization, you're going to find that those ideas are not the things that you want to do. They may be great ideas, but not relevant.
They have to be aligned with the mission and the vision of the organization.
Filtering the ideas using your purpose is one, but then you have to consider the talent and ability to execute too, right? Those are the kind of things that the members of the organization should be aware of. We are in this business because of the following strength, or this is why we're good at this and we can do this. So when they match their ability to execute, their inherent talents, and the purpose of why they exist in that setup, then it gets easier to figure that out. And it's not by diktat, really. It's not because one guy decided, let's go invest in this particular market. It's more like all of them thinking, it's particularly, relevant to companies that want to go do new things, right? It's great. You see all the time, like in the news. I don't want to talk about Google, but Google had tried to do many things. I mean, they are successful in a number of things, but maybe Google isn't a perfect example. But, there are companies like that, right, which try to do, and then they're not able to. That's good. The ability to go and experiment is good. But at the same time, how big are these bets also come into play, right? Smaller ideas, which ties into the later question also, like, how do you validate these and which ones do you pick and all that. So this is a very complex scenario, really. You have to experiment a little, validate it. Maybe it works. Maybe you discover your own strengths in that process that where they apply. No hard and fast answers here, but ultimately it's a more synthetic process, or like by osmosis you observe these things versus a framework for it. I'm always afraid of these frameworks and models and all these things because they give a very deterministic answer to fairly qualitative things in the world. So it's easy to draw 2x2s, but a lot of things don't fit into just 4 possible options.
Welcome Mark Tamis, who is joining us from France. Also Nick DiMartino from Los Angeles. Larry McKeel says it's high potential. Ideas get created and recognized by peers. If you don't fully understand the concept, you cannot appreciate its expression.
Totally.
Mm-hmm.
I would very much agree with that comment. So this is a generation that produces high-class innovation or value, right? These are these experts who continue to be awesome people in their fields, and then their work gets peer-reviewed, and it continues along that path. So that's really what all of this open source is an outstanding example of, this kind of philosophy, right? All the people who in the open source world, they're contributing their code, it gets reviewed by the peers, and then they vote in what goes into the product. Don't like it, people can fork it and go and create their own product. So there is sufficient freedom there. This is just the kind of awesome productivity, and it's completely different from a previous world where ideas belong to just one set of people. And so we see this kind of how the open innovation process, open source, and other platforms, software platforms, all of them trying to make it, hey, show me your stuff. If you're good at it, you'll get rewarded. That's it.
It's important that the employees who are at the customer touch points, such as customer support, tech support, customer service, they're getting a different view of the customer than further in at product management. This is something that developers certainly were not speaking to customer support, and product management often didn't have time to speak to them. So I would make sure I was situated close, if possible, to get some input from them or to walk by them on a daily basis, because the people who knew the most about the product were the customer support people on the technical end, because they knew the problems the customer was having installing or updating or accessing all the features.
Yep, that's true. I can tell you here, we have a team that works with our various clients. They're called community managers here. They know better. In fact, they know some of the stuff on the software better than I do. I mean, they know exactly how it got developed, how it gets rolled out. When you do this certain condition, you get this. It's, to that point, it goes back to that notion that those folks, Larry, this is for you, the crispy edge. But those folks are really on top of it. And I think the unfortunate thing is probably feedback that they've gotten is maybe potentially buried in a CRM system somewhere, or maybe in a trouble ticket system somewhere.
Yep.
Certainly not the stuff that becomes the basis of how you get ideas and actually sort of progress your products forward. So I think that's an important thing that has to be called out. And I think that's one of the advantages of kind of expanding it out and including these folks into the innovation process.
You said it's big if they're called customer service?
Community managers, actually.
Ah, they're the community managers.
Yeah, there are actually, they liaise with their counterparts, with our clients and work with things. Yeah.
I think we've spoken to which employees are right for participating in the innovation process. And Larry had already started answering how you find high potential ideas, from which we've been talking about how to find the ideas, but we didn't speak to from the high volumes of them. Prabhakar was talking about how to filter them.
Yep.
That was Q3. Q4 is, what are some models for engaging employees in a process that falls outside their day jobs?
That's a good one. I think that goes back to the earlier question about community management, right? In general, like innovation management, community management. I mean, and let's continue that, pick it up that earlier question. Modern innovation management is much more, has very a heavy, heavy, heavy dose of community management built into it, along with the basis on which you actually start sourcing, looking at the ideas, the kinds of questions you ask, and things like that. So yeah, that's a good question. So what are the wells to engage employees in the process falls outside their day jobs? I've got five things I've laid out here, and there's more than this, but I'll start with these five. Let's start with intrinsic motivation. You're going to participate because this idea will help me do my job. I mean, that's just sort of a basic thing, you know? I think that goes back to the people that are feeling the pain points. When an opportunity comes to actually express it, of course they're going to do that. That's just intrinsic. Next is burnish your credentials. And by that I mean that for some folks, actually being successful and doing well in the innovation program actually reflects well on the employee. It's another part of your career, your sort of career trajectory. You've got the projects you're working on, the things you're doing, and actually having some excellence in terms of the innovation program, because innovation is still so near and dear to so many companies' hearts, actually is something that's a chance to really, as I say, burnish your credentials. Part of the interview, this sounds funny, but this is the third way you do it. And I know that everybody's gone on board with this, but I was talking with a company the other day, and they actually have it as your bonus, your annual bonus, and what you're going to get on that is tied to participation and performance on the innovation program. It's like, wow, that's really baking it in. That's really. So I have to admit, I haven't heard that commonly, but I heard that. I thought, well, that's interesting, actually. And they were getting great results. Their yield rate on the ideas posted was a lot higher than I think I'd ever heard. So perhaps there's something there for that for us all to learn.
They're actually tying performance perks to their participation in the innovation process?
Yep. I say it's not a common thing. So I don't want to express that. That's something we're seeing all the time with all our customers. But I heard that. I was like, wow, that's impressive. And wow, you got results. So just let it out there. Next reason is prizes for participation in top ideas. And that's the great thing. That's sort of just put it out there. And the prizes could be anything from a chance to actually meet that senior level executive who, you know, if you could just get some of her time, you can actually move something forward or whatever it is. It may be a day of PTO. People will take that. It may be low level. We've actually had one where it's Amazon gift certificates. It's a $20 gift certificate. But people really respond to that. We have one company. What they do is they actually run every quarter, they run a challenge. And at the end of the quarter, the top 10 ideas that emerge from all the crowdsourced feedback, those 10 get a chance to then present to an internal VC board. They've got several million devoted to this program. And if your idea is one of the ones that comes out that's selected from that process, your idea goes in the prototype. And so that, for a lot of the folks at this company, that's tremendous. That's a fantastic reason to participate, of course. And then the fifth one would be, one thing is just sort of more just, it's a lighter weight treatment, but things like just basic game mechanics. Creating methods of engagement for folks to want to return and participate. I think one of our favorite ones that we've got out there is the reputation score that gets calculated. It's based on the feedback you get against your contributions. One of our customers, they actually cut a video where they talked about the competition to have your reputation be a little bit higher. And so that's actually, it's a small thing. I don't expect it to be the dominant thing, but certainly it's a tool that you can use to actually help get folks involved in the process.
Saeed Khan says, don't waste your time by asking for input and then ignoring it. That would kill any incentive to contribute. So certainly if you're going to encourage them, ask them for input in structured ways and engage them like one would a customer or prospect. Yes, and Larry McKeo is delighted that you used his word crispy. He wants to caution around tying perks to participation in an innovation program. Look for more of the intrinsic to create quality versus quantity.
Mm-hmm.
Good point.
No, I think that's fair.
One basic thing, which it's all fine, all the rewards, all the awards, all of it is great. But I think something more fundamental that employees should have is actually time. Time off from their job to go and do such things so that they can. So it can't be do your work and then also be quote-unquote innovative. And a fundamental part of that innovative spirit comes from, especially now, is from connecting the dots, like from applying things from other areas that they are not normally looking at, right? Things like, I propose twice a year or even once a year, give them a check for $3,000 or $2,000, whatever the case may be, to go attend a workshop on something completely unrelated to their jobs. So if you're working in software, give a $1,500 check and tell them to go have fun, learn something entirely new. It could be music, it could be whatever. For 5 days of immersion in something completely unrelated, and when they come back, what they really go look at some other industry, right? You're in software, go look at how the retail industry works, or go work at something else. Go and enjoy that factory tour or something like that. And you'll start then thinking about, there are things I learned here that these patterns I recognize and apply could possibly, right? Go attend a week of astrophysics, whatever it is. I think unless we cross-pollinate and make it better and go attend conferences and things like that, people don't have such opportunities who are supposed to actually, quote-unquote, be innovative. And all these awards, all these rewards, fundamentally, that has to be tied to the fact that the employees have the time to go and do it, right?
Good point. Also, out at Replies, Jason Little had said earlier, he was answering a question earlier in the week, move to a 4-day work week and give employees 1 day per week to do whatever they want, which I think is the Google model. I think they have 20% of time. But you're making a broader point, Prabhakar, and saying it doesn't even have to be tied to what they're doing during the week necessarily, or even to corporate goals, that you're talking about expanding the creativity and even refreshing the spirit of the employee.
Absolutely. And people will say, well, we already give you 3 weeks, 2 weeks of vacation time each year. Well, the thing is that it's not the time that you go and actually to learn something. This is learning time. Like, go to a conference for 3 days or 2 days and do something. The vacation time is for the family. It's about mental rest and rejuvenation and bringing those ideas with a purpose versus just frittering away the time or getting overstressed on the work that you have. Like, it's about working smarter, right? And so you can't do all of these with, I'll work 7 days a week, every day, 14-hour days, and, you know, all of that. A lot of the simpler jobs in our life are taken care of by machines or other things, automated things. Almost approached a period in the history of time where we can use more of our brain for doing wonderful things. if we only get the time.
So Larry McKeo says, innovation time sounds good in theory, but the reality is that it's hard to carve out that time used to make up day-to-day needs. And Said says it can be a vacation, but if so, who'd want to work? You need to position the time as education or research.
Yeah,
so he's concerned it might be exploited.
Yeah,
appropriate.
I agree with Said on that. Sure. Yeah, I mean, give education time or research time, pay the fee for the workshop or the conference they need to go, and then come back and then share their insights from what they learned, right? So I've been doing that myself, not to tug my own horn here, but for the last several years, I just take my time off, vacation days, really, and go and spend my own money and go and attend conferences or workshops, whatever it is. I learn myself. Then I come back and share it. Some of those people that I have worked with, my team, my managers, would then, hey, this is really good. I'm not going to actually apply this against your vacation. And some are even like, even better ones would be like, you should just go and apply for reimbursement I gave you because this is so valuable to us. Well, I told you this is going to be, but the point is that you have to have employees that don't necessarily ask for permission, because I'm not going to ask for permission. But at the same time, not everybody is going to do that because there is a fair amount of risk involved in that. The employer also should understand that the future is about that kind of freedom. If they will build value for themselves, it's ultimately contributing to the value of the company they work at. It's a larger picture view of this that I don't see in large companies.
Welcome, Tim Whitworth from Leeds, England. Moving on, we already spoke earlier to question 5 about, isn't this a popularity contest for ideas?
That's right.
And what company would operate that way? So I think you spoke to how it's not about popularity. It's about what resonates across the organization. 2-6 means, what does it mean to evaluate an idea? We actually did speak to this earlier.
Yeah.
In terms of it needs to align with the mission and the vision of the company. 2-7, how to say no to an idea, yet not discourage future participation. That is a big issue when talking to customers and customer suggestions.
Yeah, it is. That's why I'm going back to that earlier thing. Just one of the things you want to kind of get your comfort level and learn it with the employees before you sort of get out there and start doing the same to customers. Because you'll have to at some point. A couple things on terms of the feedback when you are going to say no. First off, every idea is sourced from some pain point, something that someone's feeling, something that we want to get done. Think hard in terms of that. Try to put yourself in the shoes of that person who's it, and sort of at least know what is potentially interested in the idea. I think that's an important thing. Because it's not like a 100% slam against the idea. If something's really bad, okay, it's bad. But generally, honest people bringing their ideas to bear, there's something good about it, some part of it that you potentially might be interested in later. But then the other thing is you have to sort of say, why was the idea not accepted? Because for employees, that feedback is valuable for a number of fronts. First off, it gives you a sense of, okay, now I understand why. And again, go back to the history. The old digital suggestion box is a black hole. You didn't know what happened. You never hear back. Dead letter file. You know what's going on there. What happens here is that people will learn, and they start to get a sense for, okay, all right, so now I understand some of the way things are looking for. And so you can actually sort of plug into what makes innovation tick inside organizations. That's an important thing. The other part is that often this question comes about is just the only mode of participation for most folks would be ideas. And that's important. Of course it's important. But I think it's just as important to get those diverse people, get those people in, like Parthar was talking about, individually for ourselves, bringing astrophysics or take on something completely different, shake things up a little bit. Get that totally separate worldview in your mind, if you will, so you help that as you come back and engage in your job. You also look at a community, having those different points of view, the person who is into astrophysics and you're into customer service and someone else is into social media or whatever it is, together around the idea is also itself, those intersections are incredibly valuable. One of the things to sort of focus on is not just the ideas you're going to have to say no to, but also make sure you highlight, illuminate, hope, make it something people want to do in terms of putting comments against the ideas, collaborating on ideas, asking questions around the idea, that kind of work. So that participation doesn't just have to be about your idea, did it go up, down on your idea, but also, are you making a difference on other people's ideas as well, things that you would like to see done? So I think that's an important part of how you say no to the idea, those three things. So it would be find a thing that is useful, that's interesting in the idea. It is describe why you can't do it. But then also, in general, make sure the focus isn't just on ideas, but it's also on people that do a great job of actually helping move others' ideas forward.
Saeed had said, define clear criteria up front to use as a gauge of value for the idea and subsequent opportunity.
Exactly. That flows exactly, Cindy, I'll jump to question 8, which is, what are best practices for running an employee innovation program? Saeed, you're right. The three things I'll list, like I'll come back to them. So if you're going to run an employee innovation program, focus is an important element. Marketing, internally, you still have to market these things. And the third is clearly defined outcomes. And I like what you've got there, which is clear criteria. Because I think you have to have a very clear sense of what's going to happen once the program gets underway. So I'll come back to the second. Focus, first off. This is one of the things now I've learned. It's coming up in 3 years at the end of this month. And I've learned this, that there is a model of using innovation software almost akin to a CRM system or an ERP. It's kind of the go-to kind of app. And that's where ideas are processed instead of invoices or sales opportunities, right? That's what it is. And that's cool. A lot of folks get value, and that's great. But one of the things we're seeing is a lot of folks actually are getting tremendous value and moving towards more of a challenge-based kind of approach with these, where it's not sort of just the open kind of platform for, hey, got an idea? It's your go-to place, which is valuable. But in addition, companies will actually put forward specific things they want to see get done. It could be new markets. It might be product ideas. It could be cost-cutting. It could be any manner. I mean, we've seen one of our customers, they had a logistics challenge because for that particular customer, the logistics of moving the merchandise around is critical. Focus is a great way of actually turning the whole thing, the process, into an event. We have so much in our head. I looked this up one time. We have like 15,000 thoughts a day. I mean, just something incredible. And day after day after day, we're thinking of things. And some of that's going to include some things that were like idea material. When you put a focus challenge out there, you're able to kind of recall. You can pull things out of our head because if otherwise, a lot of this stuff, you know, comes and goes, and it almost becomes a paradox of choice. You're giving too much of a blank slate. And so I think a focus is actually great for sort of teasing some of that out. So I think focus has a lot of value there. Marketing. The best campaigns when you're running these innovation programs, you're going to market it to your internal organization. As I said, it raises awareness of it, which is critical. And it really does make it an event. I mean, we've had some of our clients have, I mean, they get the creativity that of corporations worldwide with this stuff is amazing. But you'll see them, they produce videos, some really creative videos, down to what they come up with. They may have a senior executive actually make kind of a simple video just to describe what they want to do. Posters are put in the various facilities, letting people know this thing is coming up, this big innovation challenge is coming up. But marketing is important, and make no mistake, if you just launch it and then depend on people to kind of just learn about it, yeah, maybe. But I think the best ones really do get results when you get a marketing push behind it. And then, actually, what Steve was saying there is clearly defined outcomes. Before you even start the thing, know what's going to happen with the ideas. Know how you're going to process them. Know what the criteria is going to be. Understand exactly, once you get them, how to handle it. Don't make that up once you've launched it. At that point, you're a bit late to figuring that out.
What you were describing as internal marketing is something that product marketing would do around a launch to get everyone involved in the launch of a new product. So everyone's excited internally. And yeah, those kinds of systems are already in place, but it's interesting to tie that to the launch of an innovation challenge.
Yeah, they even brand it. The whole program is given a name. It has a catchy logo, its own look. It's really impressive what folks will do.
Excellent. So EAT says distinguish ideas from opportunities. It's the opportunities that can be addressed by ideas that are valuable.
Yeah, I hear
and
that.
And the employee innovation program must be an ongoing process. Not an annual submit your ideas event, which occurs to me. Yes, it can't come just from HR to be a one-time thing. It needs to be a true investment, recognizing what the value is across the entire organization. So as you said, it needs to come from senior execs down.
It does, and it's right about the ongoing. One of the things we'll see is that you'll run a three-week time challenge, and then they'll run another, they have another one scheduled. Another. You know, it's a continual thing. What changes really is the nature of what they're trying to seek. It might be a cost-cutting this time, but it might be how do we address emerging mobile dynamic or whatever it is, big data, all those things. But that's the kind of thinking that goes into forming these challenges out there.
You will have to come back to discuss crowdsourced innovation management platforms and enterprise software ecosystems and how they fit together.
You got it.
So thank you.
Thanks, Cindy, for the time. And just as a general observation, I expect that not just what we're doing, but I think you're seeing it across so many realms from out there like Kickstarter and this notion that you can start to pull the crowd, the community in a broad basis, I think is gaining currency. And I think we've always focused on social graphs, and Facebook is going to do well with its IPO, and I think that doesn't go away. But I think what's starting to change now is you're starting to see a lot of these things, like a term you'll art, you'll start to see it out there, is interest graphs. And I think there's this notion of not just who you're in your social network and social circles, but what interests you. Oh, look, it turns out some other people are interested in that as well. And I think certainly that's part of expanding the innovation pie. Not so much what the person I'm sitting next to in the cubicle is thinking, but that person halfway across the world has a very similar point of view on something that I think is important from an innovation perspective, but you're seeing it in all sorts of realms. And I think society in general is starting to see more of that kind of trend. Great place to be and look for, I think, just increase, not just for innovation, but you know, the innovation management realm itself, but I think in many areas of our lives.
Excellent. Prabhakar?
My concluding remarks are very simple. I second what Hutch just said about we're in a great place. I think we are in the, just in terms of like how technology has enabled a number of things, this is just the beginning, or it's the very early phases. So there's so many avenues open for us to collaborate and produce newer things and better things, and it's just a lot of fun ahead. So, you know, innovation is not just for one or two or, you know, a few select people. We just have to see more and more of this. We shouldn't have a tweet chat on innovation. It should just be there. Like, it's just like, it should just be commonplace. So if it is that common, then we don't have to talk about innovation.
It's just ingrained in the culture, which, yes. And by the way, there is
it's like email. You know,
yeah.
We don't have a tweet chat on email. Everybody uses email, so everybody innovates. And over.
There actually is a weekly chat called InnoChat that is specifically innovation issues every week.
Opportunities.
Yes. Thank you so much, Hutch. Please come back. I will be posting the transcript of tweet. You spoke very fast. So
I do get that.
So I suggest that people listen to the podcast, which while they also view the Twitter transcript. Thank you again to Hutch Carpenter for joining us and to Prabhakar Gopalan for co-hosting. Check out our sponsor, the AIPMM.com, the Association of International Product Marketing and Management, who has a few webinars coming up. And join us next week. Thank you again.